hold this conversation just so we can make sure we're recording. Okay, let's start over and act over. Take one, everyone, back to places, and chop. Fangs and Fonts post RF. So after our wonderful RF episode, we decide that we are going to go back to the olden days for this episode where we don't actually have a outline.
When was this something in the old days?
What? We used to not have outlines.
We had one.
We very quickly kiboshed not having outlines because it made very...
Everyone's going to love this episode now. Oh, great. They're not organized this one? Oh, boy.
Oh, dear.
So, how was everyone's RF?
I'm so stoked for next year.
It was actually really good. I had a lot of fun.
It wasn't bad.
I wasn't there.
You missed a butt time.
No, you got to see all the supernatural people, so.
I did. And I got to hug them.
So, this episode's title will be FNF Off Rails.
FNF Derailed.
FNF. Fuck it.
fuck it. I'm not dealing with this shit.
I'm not shipping it. Just fuck it.
I ship it.
Nope.
So everyone's RF was good? What was your favorite part of RF?
The kaffa clutch.
I had my actually, own poi this time.
Yay.
We got Mars to dance.
All of us got my
Mars to dance.
And the leader of DiZerono.
The leader of DiZerono probably contributed a little more than the rest of us, but you know.
Hey, we still got him to dance.
Coffee clutch or whatever.
That was
great, other than the fact that it doesn't work when you go to bed at 4 a.m.
No.
That's
your but for fault. Those of us
it's
that,
a con. What do you would expect?
Yeah, coffee clutch was nice. I just wasn't.
I'm under the young age of 30. You think I'm going to go to bed at time?
You guys missed so much fun, though. It was like, I know, you guys stayed up late. That's
I missed
fun.
A lot of the stuff that happened with the writing stuff.
But the coffee clutch is, for me, and then for Jan, most likely, was just the chance to like sit there and have coffee and just chat with writers and then usurp the entire group into my own little circle was kind
of
nice.
I think one of my favorite parts was we didn't drive.
It yeah, really makes a difference.
Yeah, really.
Once you've done it once, you can't do it again.
Oh my god!
Driving is—it's not happening next year. Well, even specifically because we're doing the honeymoon, and there's no way I'm driving to goddamn Newport.
Oh! I enjoyed being married to you briefly.
That was quite interesting.
God, that was awkward.
I wonder if that's why I got so many panels.
Maybe.
What happened now?
Oh right.
Oh.
Ocean it also and means I then were... that he thought a woman wrote my story.
Ocean and I got married. Yeah. Apparently. Yep.
Hunter thought I was his wife when he was dealing with us through the emails. When we get there, he was like, "Oh, I kind of have to tell you something. I thought Ocean was Voice's wife." I'm like, "Well, I'm glad I've pleasantly surprised you. Here's his fiance."
And the fun thing I found funny is on the podcast we've talked about us getting married a lot.
He doesn't listen to the podcast. Yeah. We can say horrible things about Hunter, and he won't even hear us.
Dun, dun, dun.
Hunter, you smell.
I think he's listening to it now.
I hope so. But now we'll find out now.
Well, he was talking about like our sultry voices in the Shit Writer Says episode, so.
He could have just been complimenting you generically in the room.
How was everyone's panels?
They were good.
Good.
Some of them were better than others.
your epic chair maneuver was fantastic.
Yep. You get full props so for the epic hard. Chair. It's like, best. I just look
Some
over
people
and...
didn't even know you did it. That's what I loved afterwards. They're like, wait, what did he do?
That
and
was
I
half the
to them.
Point.
They're like,
yeah,
wow.
That was,
no,
that
no, no.
Was
the fact that I just like looked over and you had moved and was like, when the F did this happen?
It was smooth.
It was nice seeing
the Allens. About the time my left eardrum broke.
Yeah. I enjoyed seeing the Allens. I really need to hang out with them more at
The Allens were quite cool. I would have loved to hang out with them more. It was interesting to hear how they go about their process being collaborative writers, basically. So.
Well, and it's for me, where I was just talking to them about...
they have a story in the anthology too, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I haven't read it.
The slowly the fact that I was sitting there talking about like the writers I mentioned on the podcast, like Selena Kitt and all that, and they're just like, yeah, we know them. We know the people who do Dinosaur Porn. We know Selena Kitt. And I'm just like,
yeah, we work with them.
Are you what? And it's like, yeah, we publish through their company. Really nice. And I'm just like, oh my god.
How do I get in on this?
Yeah, you had to be really dirty.
Right, really dirty.
That's really too bad. I only got to see them in passing. Like I.
That's why the coffee things were good.
Oh yeah.
Well, like literally,
up before 11 was a bit of a challenge.
Yeah, I know. Well, there was walking into
that's my issue.
Into the coffee clutch, and literally my first statements being, "Thanks, you bat. Thank you, all of you, you assholes. Now I want to write really dirty erotic porn." At which point, the Allens raise their hands and flag me over. I sit down and proceed to have conversations about writing taboo porn.
And then 2 weeks later, you went, I don't want to write porn anymore.
No, there's a difference.
You want a hiatus from porn, sorry.
I want to write dirty porn. I want to write dirty porn that I want to read. I don't want to write porn for the fandom or for profit or for anything like that. I literally just want to write porn for the sake of having that kind of exercise to do for myself.
See, and lately I've actually found myself wanting to personally move away from mostly erotic material.
Well,
I'm getting a little bored.
How's your erotic coming right now?
Which one?
The time traveling.
I don't know.
I don't know. It's not done,
and it might not be done.
But this can be a topic we can touch on here, where, like, because, yeah, that was my realization. I was hitting a wall. I was struggling and struggling and struggling to write these stories. And I mean, trying to do skin to fur for like what, a couple months now, and it wasn't happening. And it just came to the point where it's just like, I realized I didn't want to write porn, at least not right now. I actually, it's even though I was struggling to write it, actually saying, no, I'm not going to write porn. I'm going to step away from it.
Well, that
and
in
just,
itself is a bit of a struggle for you too.
Well, the realization, like just saying, I'm not going to write free porn right now. I'm just going to step away from it. And actually acknowledge that I'm stepping away from it allowed my brain to go, okay, relax. You know, you don't have to worry about this anymore. And once you give yourself permission to forget about writing for that, it frees up a lot that you don't know your mind is holding on to.
Subconscious anxiety.
Yeah, well, like, the funny thing about the Fur to Skin story that I'm trying to write is that because I decided that I was going to try to arc it over three stories, it's turned into a story that I don't want to limit to a 10,000 word erotic short story. And it's really frustrating because I want to finish it, but at the same time have to admit that it's probably not going to the anthology.
Well, one thing to go with what I was talking about is, I mean, take Rikoshi's journal post where he's just, you know, he struggled and struggled and struggled with writing, and then when he had to finally give himself permission to not write, that all that stress just kind of went away. I mean, the moral of his journal post is that he's now writing again, which, you know, says a great many things about being a writer and all that, but that it's that fact that even if you're like, oh, I've got to write this, I'm not going to write erotica right now, just flat out stating, I am not going to write erotica, has to give you that kind of that mental switch where it's like, okay, I'm going to think on other things right now.
Think of the amount of people that do things, say like podcasts or like writing or whatever, that to say, as soon as it stops being fun, I'm going to stop doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that, you know, for certain people, it stops being fun after a while. You have to take a break to appreciate the kind of joy you got out of it in the first place.
That's why I'm trying to finish this story for October, because then I want to take the next 2 months
off.
Well,
and see, that's the thing, is I am envious of the fact that you can do that.
That I can
take time
off.
The fact that you can just take time. Because Jan suggested, because I was talking about, I'm like, I really am having this struggling writing right now. And she said, well, why don't you just take the rest of the year off and just review books? And it's like, that is highly tempting. However, not writing for that point of time, I just look through my giant red binder and it's just like, I want to write for this. I want to write for this. I want to write for this. I can't just not write
That's
for
the
it.
Amazing thing is that, sorry, I'm interrupting you. I know, is that there's this small gap right now because there's the Furtiskins, which are already erotica, so I'm already probably not writing for them. I have one idea, but I don't know if I can flesh it out.
I had zero idea for them.
Yeah, and until Furry Future came out, otherwise the end of September was like done, and then that gave me a few months to, because a lot of the time I put other things aside, like other hobbies that I would do because of the writing for the podcast, for the editing, for beta reading, for anything. Well, like, yeah, I didn't even get to read as much. See, most of my reading is 10 minutes on the bus, so I need a bit of a refresh. I need to enjoy something else.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it does become more of a chore than it does...
You trudge.
I'm pretty jealous of your ability to seemingly deliberately take time off, and that is not something that I can do properly.
Well, it also helps when one of the new anthologies coming out in the spring is your own, so you don't have to write for it.
Well,
because that limits the four anthologies coming out, so I only have to write for three of them.
Yeah, but that doesn't always stop me from doing things. I mean, anybody that follows the Punk'd Anthology Twitter or FA knows that at this point I'm trying to say, okay, this other shit that I'm doing needs to stop, and that I will be working on this. Well, at the same time, I have at least two other novels that I need to try and write, and there are two modes in which I have completely off or balls to the wall,
mm-hmm.
and that's it. I don't have many other options.
But part of doing an anthology or working on a large novel is putting other things aside.
Sometimes I have to bite the bullet and go,
I want to write for this, but I won't have time because I am dedicated to these people for my anthology. Or if I want to write that novel, because there's many people that are writing short stories right now, they're like, I'm going to write that novel. It's there. I just need to find the time. When it's like, you just got to put it aside.
I get that, but like, it's taking the time to actually go, like, I need to be doing this is hard when writing is such a
integral.
It's something that you need to be passionate about to do well, I think, because you can tell when somebody's not invested in a story, and so you can't always just sit down and go, I'm going to write 5,000 words. I mean, if they're going to be uninspired dribble.
Yeah.
Yeah, but are you saying that every single time you write, you're completely inspired to write? Because I'm going to call bullshit on that.
Not always, but...
I'm like, if I only wrote when I was inspired, most of my stories would have large holes in them because they're the parts that I didn't really want to write, but you've got to get through them to get to the next part. And then you can come back when you see the whole picture and go, oh, well, now I know what I need to improve this and what it was really there for.
Right, because that falls into what I'd said in the writing panel about, you know, I just write down the idea, then I highlight it red, and then I continue on.
Well, and that's part of the reason that I do write mostly short stories at the moment, is because they're short little bite-sized pieces. You know, you don't have to have the whole buffet. You can come back at your leisure, take a little bit, write your 10,000 words, and publish it. But when I think about the amount of short stories I publish and how many novels that actually makes, mm-hmm. then I'm like, well, what am I doing sitting on my ass here for?
Yeah, well, it's the whole thing between writing short stories versus writing novels. I mean, I've got enough short stories under my belt that it's like, RIMO-NIMO's coming up next month.
RIMO-NIMO?
RIMO-NIMO.
RIMO-NIMO-NIMO?
RIMO-BIMO?
RIMO-NIMO.
RIMO-NIMO.
Fuck you all.
NIMO bars.
Finding Remo.
Finding
Remo. Well done. The thing is with that coming up, I'm looking at an entire month where it's like, I'm going to be writing on a novel project. And immediately when I think of that, it's all the things I want to get published in that point are getting shoved to the side just to work solely on that novel. And part of me really is just kind of like, it's not going to be for pub, most likely not. But at the same point, it's just like, if writing something like that without a purpose to me seems out of place and seems like, if I'm going to write something, I want to do something with it.
It's like going for a hike just to see a brick wall.
Well, I can... Funny you should mention NaNoWriMo, because like I've been looking at it. There's an interesting program that just came out that's in beta called Noveler, and you know, I signed up for the beta, I got the key, and it's a very simple web-based novel writing program. Like, it gives you a title, it gives you your chapters, you can name your chapters,
yeah,
and then it saves it for you. That's pretty much it.
Just makes an outline.
It allows you to write your novel in chapters and. Oh. It'll save it for you. And well, they're like, are you doing NaNoWriMo? I'm like, maybe. I mean, I've got three novels. I have my plate full. So I think I used to be all about doing NaNoWriMo, but I think that I've got enough
practice
work ahead of me that I don't need November as an excuse to write.
Yeah. Well, actually...
So that's a good point.
Next time we're at, kind of on topic, next time we're at the Write Meet.
Mm-hmm. Tomorrow.
look at Dallin's Scrivener page.
Is Dallin coming? He has been sick and he is moving.
Well, regardless, next time you see him, look at his page because he has it all broken down into his chapters. And I actually looked over and it's like, oh, someone using Scrivener properly. I really wish I used Scrivener properly instead of how I'm using it right now.
And the Noveler guy runs a Twitter feed, and if anyone's interested, it's novlr.org. I'm pretty sure you said it will always be free. So, like, it's really nothing special, but that's kind of the point. It's just very simple. But, yeah, I mean, I think NaNoWriMo's great, but I think, given my scope, it's just not feasible.
Well, it's, for me, I mean, I did the camp one in the July or August. And it was like, the reason I failed is because I was working on so many side projects, I couldn't friggin' work on a novel-length project. And unfortunately, that just created so many problems, because I can't do both. That's my problem, is I'm going to work on one, I'm going to get work on one till it's done. You know, otherwise, I'm just kind of going to be scatterbrained and not able to sit down, because I'm a discovery writer, and the problem with discovery writing is that because you're scattered and you're running all over the place, it's...
So, I mean, I know you've tried doing a lot of planning before your stories and stuff like that. Do you still consider yourself a discovery writer after all that?
I do, because I still discovery write. That said, for next month, I'm going to hopefully not discovery write it.
Are you going to try and have a proper plot?
I think when it comes to NaNo... Like, if I were to do NaNoWriMo again, I think one of the main things that NaNoWriMo does force me into is actually planning out what my novel's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know I'm in for a long haul if I'm going to try and write 50,000 words.
Yeah.
Especially if you're discovering it.
But,
See, I really liked the camp this summer. That was actually quite...
The camp was fun.
The fact that you're setting your own goal was already nice enough that you're not... You're already kind of taking a layer of stress off.
And it doesn't have to... And it didn't have to be a novel.
Yeah. Like, I ended up writing two short stories, which... And it, just by setting that as a goal, which was kind of a higher goal for me, was nice enough to go, like, oh, I can do this. This is how much I'd have to write in a month to do that. And at the same time, you've got your cabin mates, which are really nice to chat with and mm-hmm. be supportive with. That was really good.
See, I'm looking forward to doing the camp next year, because I hopefully won't be doing the two-job thing for a while.
Ever?
Yeah, ever. Again,
I've done two jobs before. It sucks ass.
I've done two jobs the majority of my life, and I flippin' hate it.
So, is it okay if I switch topics?
Yeah.
One thing we were talking about that came up today for a possible grab bag topic was, we'd like to think all of us are relatively
aliens.
No.
You're not. Wait, hold on. Are you going to say my idea?
Okay, you can say
your
idea.
You're not saying my idea. You say your own ideas. Keep mine
No,
in
you
mind.
Say your idea.
No,
so,
I don't want to say it right
my
now.
Idea. did you Four. Guys... have you listened to, like, the latest Ready Excuses?
I've downloaded them. Yeah, I haven't... Well,
they did
one
where they discussed the merits, the differences or the similarities of thriller or mystery. Kind of, are they the same thing? Are they a different thing? And when I even just heard them even mentioning that was the same thing, to me, I was like, no.
No, they're
not. But one of the people debated it, and to me, I realized, like, anytime I think thriller and horror actually match up much differently.
There was actually a thing that I retweeted on Twitter that was in regards to something I came across on Kobo when they were talking about the horror genre, where they were like, the horror genre is this tiny little subgenre of thriller, and, you know, and they went on, and I'm just like, fuck are you talking about?
It's funny
this
because
tiny little genre in the I understand that
horror is just this tiny little thing.
I understand that they're related, actually, on that note, but I understand that they're related, but they're not. It's not a tiny genre. That said, there is a current, the horror selfie movement that's happening now, where it's, you're getting famous horror writers and just horror fans and basically taking a selfie where they're holding a sign saying, you know, read this book. It's, you know, whatever reason, or just a note. Like Stephen King's was like, read a scary book, you know, this Halloween and things like that. And it's just because they're trying to promote awareness of the horror genre because it doesn't have this lot of like movement behind it.
What I've seen happen is a lot of, especially in movies, they've started categorizing horrors more as thrillers or psychological thrillers because they almost want to get away. Yeah, because they want to get away from the jump scare slash fic horror cheesy, because, you know, there's boo and then there's, I don't know what the heck's going to happen and I'm crapping my pants because of that. Yeah. And although they can both be horror,
shaky camera movies,
one fits a little more into thriller. And even just thriller, mystery, and horror just actually all are very, very similar when you think about it.
I was telling a friend yesterday, if they wanted to hear you drone, well, not drone on, but talk on for hours, that they should talk to you about the difference between various horror genres. But I don't know, like, do you really think that horror, people are forgetting about horror? Because it's such a wildly popular genre for some people. It's
huge popular.
Like, some people love being scared, and I know a lot of them.
As someone who writes horror and as someone who goes and, like, shops for horror books regularly on places like Indigo and sometimes Amazon, it's, when I look at the books, it's, here's the latest releases for horror, and it's very tiny. Here's your latest releases for romance or paranormal or even science fiction and fantasy is significantly larger than in the horror genre. Horror genre, you get your first books and there's Stephen King, there's Stephen King's son, and then a couple other people.
Do you think it very well could be just because that when people buy horror, like, it's almost like less socially accepted to be selling like horror material? And
I think by saying, like, thriller, you're going to hopefully get more people that may not read horror. Like, Cabin in the Woods, I haven't watched, but I kind of want to because it sounds more like a thriller than a horror. And I'm not sure, mostly for books, like, is there very small horror and very small mystery but much larger thriller?
I think there's a far greater thriller. But
if you notice how they show off movies today, when was the last time you heard a movie discussed as a mystery? Even Sherlock Holmes was an action thriller.
People also
thriller,
really like
right?
to prevent people from being able to see things that they consider gory or, you know, not politically
like horror,
correct.
They don't really say it's much horror as much. It'll be, you know, on the edge of your seat thriller.
Well, I don't think horror has a chance of dying anytime soon. I mean, if you look at the lineups to go into with Halloween coming up here, just look at the number of people going down to the haunted houses. Like, that in itself is proof that people continually like to be scared, and that bloody, drippy, jump out and scare you type of thrill is still sought after.
Or do you think that the category of quote-unquote horror is being categorized to death?
I think, well, this goes into the whole genre categorization. The fact that right now you're getting a lot of
It's not horror, it's thriller.
Well,
it's
a
slasher.
Well, you're getting
a
lot of cross-genre books. And the problem with that is, and this is one of the things that has come up on pretty much every writing podcast I've listened to, is as we evolve, people are taking from different genres and combining them. So you're getting all these cross-genre books that when you end up picking it up, it's not just a horror book, or it's not just a YA book, it's not just a sci-fi. It's, you know, it's a YA sci-fi horror thriller about that self-discovery. And
this reminds me somewhat of the argument some people make about porn and seeing too much of it. You end up getting, like, the, you know, my brother's sister's mother's father's, like, great uncle, you know, who is also a cyborg alien from planet Neptune. But I think the genre of horror is far from dying.
Oh, it's far from dying. It's just the fact that it's just such a, like, small genre, and it's not a widely recognized genre.
I mean, maybe not so much in books. Like, I'm not much of a reader of horror, but as far as trailers and movies that are coming out of horror, like, they're rampant.
Yeah, no, like right now, especially
elevators and stairs and monsters in the woods and
shaky camera cam.
And Ouija boards and Annabelle the doll.
I hate shaky cam so much.
Oh, yeah, no.
Paranormal. What's actually funny is the first Blair Witch time
to blame for that one.
Well, the first time Annabelle came on the TV, this one was that's the wrong doll.
Well, Annabelle is a real
Chuckle's bride.
No. Annabelle is a real haunted doll.
Yeah.
Owned by my most hated couple, the Warrens. But it's a rag doll. It's not a porcelain doll. And the thing is when you see Annabelle, it's creepy. It's creepy because it's this seemingly normal rag doll that just happens to look evil. And of course, being in a enclosed box encased in crosses in their supernatural library doesn't exactly help matters. Making a movie about Annabelle and starring a creepy ass doll that no parent would give to their kids.
No person in their right mind would buy that from anywhere. If someone would give that to me as for a baby gift to be like, you're the worst type of person.
I was gonna say,
ever.
I don't know, some parents really suck.
That's true. Yeah, they do, but the doll they've got in this movie it's like, why would you give this to what did you just pull this out of the garbage on the way here? Like, what the
but
hell
yeah, so
are you?
But and I mean that's a anyway, yeah. There's a lot of horror films coming out right now.
Gee, it's almost like it's Halloween time.
Yeah, I know.
Oh
I
my
know,
god!
I know.
Like that's such a coincidence.
Well, that
so,
was.
I mean,
what did you want to ask about?
Well, no, it's her topic. I can't continue on.
So, what would you like to talk about?
Well, I was.
We're all about abrupt scene change.
Shaky cam scene change.
Well, in addition to the shaky cam, what I hate is the whooshy cam action scenes.
Oh, where they try to distract
you. Yeah, you can't see what's going on because the camera moves too
fast.
And
the flicker lights.
Yeah.
Shaky cam, whooshy screen, and flicker lights. No, fuck off.
And, like, blurry at-home cam. Like,
oh.
Every scene actually, it's funny. I didn't really notice it too much until somebody's like, every scene where it's supposed to be like a whole movie, it focuses in and out of focus before they even start the video.
So dumb.
Now you will never not see it.
Yeah, you can't unsee this! I was had a thought, because like my sister texted me today asking me for, you know, just to give her a hand with something tomorrow, and I told her, you know, I'm unable to help you. Tomorrow's our writing meet, and I've got a deadline I really want to hit at the end of the month. And it occurred to me that instead of saying, you know, oh, put it off, or oh, it's not that important, my sister we grew up in a household of musicians, so Dad can't do something tonight. He's got to practice. We accept it. And it kind of struck me that I'm probably lucky that if my mom invites me over to do something and I say, I'm sorry, I'm writing, she doesn't belittle it. She doesn't, you know, try and make me come out anyway. She just says, oh, okay, enjoy, and I'll talk to you later.
It's one of the really nice things about having the writing meetings that we do because I don't even think about it. On Tuesday, I'm busy.
Yeah. But it's not even like a scheduling thing. It's just that family asks you, friends ask you to do something, and I consider myself lucky that I can say I'm writing and nobody tries to convince me to do otherwise because they think that my writing is unimportant.
Well, it's so easy
so
for people
what
to
would
poke
you,
fun at it.
Yeah, but what would you do in the situation if you didn't have the understanding spouse or the understanding friends or family? If you told
I've talked to people like that where...
See,
you know,
I haven't.
There are people like, hey, they've almost asked, like, you're still doing that writing thing? Why? What's the point?
Yeah, like they don't get it, and I'm just wondering how someone would approach dealing with people like that in their life.
Tell
I mean, besides
them to STFU.
See, that's exactly what he said. He said, "Tell them to fuck off and go
some,
do it anyway."
Ask them the next time
they're
participating in their hobby, and then ask them why.
Yeah. Oh, why?
Well, like, yeah. Well, people like.
Oh, you're playing baseball again? Why?
You're breathing.
You're watching hockey again? You know, you're not actually playing the game.
It's so very. Commonplace for people to question why people even have hobbies and like things that they do for fun. It's almost always considered a waste of time, no matter what it is.
Well,
from
is
writing to like poi to anything that like I do, they're like, oh, you're such an oddball. I'm like, well, yeah, I fucking have fun doing it.
I have the hobbies that are not the TV and the video games. Yes, I'm a strange person.
I mean, with my stepmother, it took her
a while.
Probably about 2 years before I stopped getting the, so how much money did you make? was like literally the first question she would ask every time writing came up. And it's like, now she's stopped doing it, because the last time she did, I was like, look, it's not fully about the money. It's about the, you know, this is how it works. I write a bunch of short stories. People get really interested in my stuff. I start doing anthologies and novels. I start getting money.
You've also been working at the same place for like 10 years. What does it matter?
Yeah,
what,
exactly.
How much money you make?
Well, isn't that like, what we were talking with Silent on Saturday? Where it's like, look, I have now been doing this for 2 years. Let me show you all the money I've made with this. And meanwhile, like, an artist in 2 years, like, even if they're just starting out, could easily make
more. And yeah. Nobody admits easily to ever making, like, oodles of cash writing in the fandom anyway.
Because it probably like, doesn't happen.
Most of us make shit, but, I mean, we don't do it because we make lots of money.
No, we do it because it has to be done.
You know, like, people that make fun of your writing are the same kind of people that sit on their ass all evening watching television. I'd be like, how much money do you make doing that, asswipe?
Ooh, feisty.
Wow, he really hit a topic.
I do have a bit of a problem when people have that kind of attitude towards having any sort of fun.
See, and that's where, where I count myself lucky, is if my sister wanted my help tomorrow, I'm writing. Okay. See you later.
Hey, well, it's like my family's thankfully understood that.
Well, I've gone over to her family's house, and it's like I'm sitting in the living room on the couch while they're all in the kitchen talking, and I'm writing, and they understand that I have something due. So they leave me the fuck alone, and I appreciate the hell out of it.
Well, and there's none of that, well, why is he being antisocial? Well, why isn't he in here with us? Well, why isn't he visiting? Well, it's because he's writing. Oh, okay. At least it's quieter than Dad practicing the trumpet.
Actually, speaking of writing excuses, it reminds me of the one episode they were talking about with, there was a Q&A session.
What do I tell my wife?
Where the wife was like, what do I do to make him stop doing this thing? And it was in reference to the fact that he will become like very withdrawn and like introspective when he's thinking about writing stuff.
Yeah.
He's and working like you.
Like pretty much everyone's answer was just like, you don't. You accept it.
You leave him the hell alone and let him work.
But at the same time, he does have to manage family. It's...
He has to recognize when his attention's meant for elsewhere. Yeah. But
one of the dead robots, because this is something I think about with the possibility of kids in the future, because there's one author who they were interviewing and he has a young girl, and they're just like, and he's like, yeah, and he's like, I deal with her, and then it's like, okay, time to go to bed, and he's got this little closet that he has outfitted in the house farthest away from her room that he will go into, close the door, and that's his writing room for the last like 2 hours of the day. The problem is she knows where he's at. So as soon as he's like, as soon as I sit down, she comes up, knocks on the door. Daddy, can I get some water? Or daddy, whatever. And it's just, you know, and it's one of those things where it's like, you have to kind of help them to understand that they can't do that. But at the same point, she's still young enough that any reason you give her is not going to be a valid reason at all.
Well, that could be one of those things where you sort of involve your kids as well. Because when you're a parent, you can't just say, sorry, honey, daddy's not your daddy for the next 2 hours and send her home, essentially. Because when something like that happens, your office isn't home anymore.
Yeah.
It's your writing space and your kids have to stay the hell out.
Like, yeah, it's the same as working a job from home, you know?
Yeah.
You're like, I can't do this right now. I'm on a conference call, you know, door is closed. Either wait, go find mom, whatever.
And I think that, maybe go find mom, or like, it almost depends on how much of an impact it has on your income for the family. If it's your true bread maker, daddy has to work. If it's, I'm making an additional $50 to $100 a month on this, hey, honey, want to help daddy with a story?
And I think that's a big thing, because I think with that case on writing excuses, that guy was hoping to, like, I want this to be the bread maker. And so it became a little more serious. And in another point, it's kind of interesting. I was listening to something or reading something where it's, I think it was writing excuses, and they were like, you know, we introduced this show for aspiring writers, but we should really just take that aspiring part off. It's for writers. If you want to be a writer, be a writer. Don't be an aspiring writer. If you want to make this thing your thing, you have to start living that mentality of this is what it's going to be.
Well, it's like one thing that always shocked me is listening to Mer Lafferty's podcast, I Should Be Writing, I think it's called. And in her podcast, she calls it a podcast for want-to-be writers. And I'm like...
That sounds even worse than wannabe.
It's every time she says it, I'm like, why did you call it wannabe writing? Like, aspiring writers, great. Beginning writers, great. But wannabe writers?
That is all the people that are like, I'm going to write a novel and then never start writing.
Yeah.
I have this idea for the novel that I started 4 years ago.
It's one of those things where until you start making money from it, until you start taking it seriously yourself, people aren't going to take you seriously. Everybody says, I'm going to write a novel.
You had something, Tom.
Yeah, my topic was her topic.
What was your topic otherwise? You had a list of friggin' topics.
You did. You did.
Well, there's the two furry thing, which... I am currently reading Partners.
Which one's that?
That's the one with the self-insertion.
Is it gay?
Yes.
Okay. Just had to check.
I've got two things in there that I can discuss. One of them is the use of hands instead of paws when you're talking about characters. In this book, they use hands. I find it extremely distracting and detracts away from the furry aspect.
So are you the exact opposite of Ray-Chan in that sense, then?
No, Ray-Chan likes paws.
No, Ray-Chan hates paws.
No, does he?
Yeah, he hates paws.
Because he told me to put paws in when I did Lily Alpha. Because
I see him put up those pictures all the time where it's like, tries to type on keyboard and open door, and then there's the masturbate joke, and he's just like, no.
Okay.
And he's like, this is how I feel.
Then yes, and if that's the case, then I am. I believe that if you're going to write, feet are feet. Hands, I like the concept of paws. It helps. And to be fair, this person does a great job. Wolf walks into an airport, is looking for someone, immediately is scenting the air, trying to track the person down. Beautiful. But hands.
Wait. He's trying to track someone down by smell in the airport?
Yes. He understands. He understands how futile, especially because he's never met this person before. But the thing is it's just the constant use of hands in there because there's not enough furry aspects to tie it up. Another thing I came across is there's one point where he ends up meeting the agent he's supposed to meet in who has tucked his tail into his pants to be polite.
Are there humans in the story too?
No.
Then why?
No.
And I'm just like, that would be if you had.
Okay, first, how is your tail coming out of your pants?
Well, it's in. I mean, for all intents and purposes, tucked into his pants.
What is a squirrel doing?
It's
parachute pants are back.
I don't. And the thing is, I read it a couple times because
one leg is.
I don't know if it's if it's meant to be like if is it tucked into the leg or is it tucked through a tail hole.
Yeah, that really.
Well,
bugs
it's
kind
of like
there's no definition to it.
I sewed the sleeves of my shirt shut just to be polite. Like you are taking an appendage and hiding it to be polite somehow.
So wait, hold on, guys. Yeah. I'm being polite. You can't notice. Yeah,
it's almost like the
this is
the waiter,
this is defeated
the waiter thing where
on
you're carrying the towel, but it's in your shirt.
Everyone has now tucked, except for me, because I'm not polite.
I'm also giving you the finger.
Everyone has tucked their arms.
But I'm being polite about it.
Yeah. So it was just
that's very polite.
So at that point, it's
polite to
stare. It's a mix of the whole furry thing where it's like there's certain elements that are working really well, and there's certain elements where you're just like,
actually.
So are we on the subject of too furry?
Because yes. That does sound like you're taking the extra step too far.
I'm gonna yes, actually, that's a perfect lead into being too furry.
To be fair, I would love to hear what their explanation of that is.
Unfortunately, for all the things of... Because Hunter was the one who ended up talking about too furry, and I thought about it. And it is possible to be too furry.
Did you find that review on Flayra about it?
I did not.
Okay.
Did you read it?
No, I just read what he wrote, which looked like a verbatim cut paste. Which was, this is too furry. And then I believe he went on to name, like, every single species choice in the entire story, which
so
there was quite
I
want
to like.
I admit, having too many species in a story can make it too, quote-unquote, furry. I think having, is like, basically throwing in a whole bunch of species,
that,
I think, can create a problem.
I kind of agree with that, because it seems like the thing to do is, I'll just make my story, say I have five characters.
Yeah.
Okay, so the main character will be a cheetah. I need something else. A ferret, a tiger, and a spider. Yeah, well, sure, that just works. And they've just thrown it in, and they've given everyone individual species for no apparent reason.
Writing about it, well, okay, go ahead.
Okay. One of the things that struck me as really odd in this, and this goes into the two furry thing.
I should say I do this as well. Yeah, so
in regards to partners, is so far you've met two wolves and a ferret, I believe. He's at the airport. He looks over and there's a giraffe toddler, which threw me. Because so far, like, I understand it's an airport.
Oh, you're the have, different types of animals.
But it's out of all the other animals you would put in there, a giraffe. Like
there was a wolf, there was a squirrel, there was a raccoon, and a giraffe.
It creates a disconnect. One of these things
doesn't belong.
Yeah, because she's walking with her parents, and it's all fine. Like, they could be Africans, they could be wherever. Yeah. But it's just, it's...
throws you for a loop.
It's like, and I mean, it didn't have to be a giraffe. It could have been a cockamissile. It could have been a lemur. It could have been, you know...
You run into a bit of an issue when you try to make too many, like, different characters species-wise. Yeah. Like, we as human beings are only used to seeing, like, you know, several different variations of people, like, to some degree. And so if you start throwing in the kitchen sink, you know, when it comes to species, and I don't know, like, did we redefine this topic from too furry? Because I don't think that's furry enough.
What? Well, no, because, I think...
Well, like, if you throw a giraffe child into a North American airport, that is obscene, like...
I think
you can't have
it. I think having too many species can be too furry. I think when you're throwing in random species or too many species, then you're basically taking it and you're going, because it's no longer you're crashing the story. You're overloading the reader with all these different species that really you don't need.
I want to address Ocean's
But I wanted to address your point before.
Damn it, I don't think it's weird because of the
airport. If it wasn't in the airport, I would completely agree. But the airport is the one place where that will make sense.
I know, and that's... Okay.
Well, like, the problem I have with, like, a giraffe in an airport, depending on, like... I get your
point. That's like, what is this African tribe doing in the airport? Oh, they're flying home.
Okay, I get your point. Granted. But, like, yeah, when you have... Just when you have people with, like, completely... Species that are not indigenous to the area. Like, you have a giraffe child in...
You have a tiger and a wolf and a kangaroo. Yeah. And they're all in the same town.
Yeah, like...
Why
yeah.
are they there? Because those are three animals that don't even
live on the same continent. A tiger, a wolf, and a bear walk into a bar. Why?
And see, and this is the interesting thing, because I know how all of us think in regards to a story. That scenario that you just presented... We would all find, why is the fucking kangaroo there? Why is the tiger there? We would all have a reason for it.
But there are we'll also write this story.
But there are also people out there that's the story, and then it doesn't matter with the species.
What was that Bleach comic in with the otter, and that was really popular? Crap, now I can't remember it. I have a copy of it.
No, I know what you're.
But that one, it was set in Australia, I think. And the people were American tourists, and that's why? Or it was the other way around?
It's a tiger, coyote, and an otter.
Summer days?
Oh, yeah. Summer days.
Summer days. Okay, so there's summer days, which
Bleach,
I think is why Bleach.
Not Bleach.
Sorry.
Blotch. Okay, I was horribly confused.
So, there's Summer Days by Blotch, and I can't remember if it's in Australia or in America, but they have people from both countries in there. And
I believe they're in Australia.
Shown as that, and that's kind of why they are the species.
And they even make fun of, like, the reversed kangaroo giblets.
But I know myself when I try to write, I try to pick a location and look for animals within that location if I'm going to use multiples. But I still question, why am I using multiples?
Well, agreed. And this is actually one of the things I've come across in...
It just seems to be the norm.
In Maggie's work, is I love Maggie's work. It's beautiful, it's emotive, but she has about, from reading, I get the impression that there's like
a zoo.
3 dozen alien species, all of them basically an anthropomorphic species, and in each species there can be a great diversity of what they look like. You can have full anthro, partial anthro, whatever. That's the impression I've gotten. And it almost comes apart where you're reading it and it's just like, you know, there's a bit too much. Even if the story is just about two of those species, you still end up hearing about everyone else, and you're just like, why?
Like, why? Writing, there's writing an appropriate level of furry is very, very fine balance. And you're never going to really please everyone, I don't think, just because you run into situations like that. Or say your universe doesn't evolve, you know, breeding between species at all, and why are they ever together? Like,
well, that's precisely it. Like, I think it's just the norm. It's the default. Everyone just likes, because the fandom itself, you go to a convention, what are you? I'm a cat, I'm a dog, I'm a wolf, I'm a three-toed tiger. You know, there's such a variety of species.
Now you also have so many hybrids.
Yeah, exactly. And so when we write fiction around a world similar to that, it kind of ends up the same. At the same time, like my story I'm writing right now, I was going to have a tribe of just different various animals, and now I'm sitting here going, why would there even be various animals? Why is it not just one?
Are you going to follow up on his point?
I was just going to pretty much mention the point, like, you know, if we're sort of basing this off of how the fandom itself operates, and then you have, like, a book where it's like, oh, this is a half-kangaroo, half-tiger villain. Like, okay, put that book down.
But is that because you're just not used to that norm?
There's a very good chance I could be acclimatized to a story like that, but at the moment, I think it's too far outside.
You're fine with reading Jay Naylor's work where cats fuck mice.
Cartoon logic?
Wizard did it!
So, like, just pushing at the bounds of your argument.
No, that's fine, but cartoons really do seem to sort of transcend some sort of logical bound.
So
boundary.
I'll just get an artist to do a toony commission of hybrids in a world, and you'll be fine, because it'll be a cartoon.
But it has to be a comic.
What about dragons? What about griffins? Do those do the same for you? Dragons are just a
lizard
with wings.
Acclimatized through mythic and lore. I mean, I get what you're
so
trying
I'll,
to do
I'll
here,
I'll write
but
up all the Tigrox lore.
If you're trying
ancestry.
To write a realistic furry story in which there are animals that can interbreed that don't have the same amount of chromosomes, then I'm going to have a little trouble suspending my disbelief.
Tough luck, then.
It doesn't mean I have to read it.
To continue on with the too furry, I also believe that if you put too much detail in regards to your character within a story, that you can actually push the anthropomorphic aspect of it too far. Where it's like, say, you walk into a room, you immediately pick up all the scents, your ears are moving, your tail is moving, your whiskers are moving, and it's basically, it's almost that where we like a certain involvement of the furry aspects, it's where you've taken it too far and you're pushing it too much.
I would have to think that partially, part of that is just white noise. In the same sense that, you know, if you live next to the train tracks, after a while you forget that the train's there. Like, 5 times a day. You'll have a guest that comes over and they'll be like, how do you sleep all night with the trains? You're like, all right, the train.
It's kind of like the first time you grow a beard. Because the facial hair is just always there.
Or something
always
about
touching
tits.
It. You're like, oh, that feels weird.
Tell me about tits.
They're so awkward when they first come in.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm going to grab this thing and you reach over and like, oh, and then you pull your arm back and you whap it or you turn something and you hit it and you pull your shirt on and you're like, oh, God. No, boobs suck. I'd rather have a beard. Than boobs. In the
I'd rather have boobs
but I'm just
testicles.
Saying, like, eventually
but
becomes part
regarding
of the
those,
background.
Yeah, okay, those, I honest to God don't know how you guys can deal with those on a daily basis.
who did I sacked a friend of mine earlier?
But in the same sense that if they've grown up going to public places that are filled with malls of different animals, you're probably just going to get used to smelling 50 at once and just starting to mute it down.
Now, to continue my other point that came from this book, that, and this goes into our topic that we started on the antagonist episode, is starting reading this book, you can't tell if the main character is gay until he's in the airport thinking about meeting this fellow Secret Service agent. And the first thing he thinks about is he looks over and he sees a billboard where it's a beautiful ocean landscape. And he immediately thinks about, what would it be like if I hooked up with this agent that I'm meeting who I've never met in person, never seen in person? What if I hooked up with him? And then he proceeds to go into this huge fantasy of them cuddling and basically leading up to sex, but then cutting off at that point.
Why does this sound like the reverse of Dude, Where's My Fox?
Interesting. But it's
because he sleeps with a guy that he's trying to find him by this one little scent. Isn't that it or something?
Yeah.
But that's at least a novel approach. But this is just to implement the fact that this character is gay.
I saw Tarl across the room. Man, I wonder if he'd like to rub that beard.
I don't know. From time to time, I've imagined sleeping with people that I've never even met, even though it might never happen. You're just like, huh, what if this fantasy happened? Have you never done that?
God, now I gotta think.
Think about ruling the fantasy you. Aspect?
You don't do that? I do that all the time. I'm sorry. I'm a horrible person.
Guilty, like, guilty. I've honest to God been like, what if this person's really hot and I really want to sleep with them? Well, how would that turn out?
Sorry, honey. It's true.
No. Anyone who's ever had a crush on like a celebrity or whatever has technically done that. So,
but you still don't know
I've slept with Avril Lavigne in my head numerous times.
In this instance, you still wouldn't know what they looked like.
That's true. But then essentially you're just making up your own personal fantasy.
I'm like, it's essentially every relationship.
It's every blind date you've ever gone on.
Yeah. Think about that person that you're flirting with so heavily online, and then you like go to meet them and you've never seen them before. You've never actually talked or hung out with them anymore, but you're like, oh, what if we hook up?
Yeah, no, it's fair.
I think guys do this more than women, but
I don't know.
Back in my internet dating, what does this have to do with writing? Nah.
I was arguing a plausible scenario,
as an introduction to the character being gay. It was very awkward, I found, because there are better ways of inviting the
it's
fact
an
that
erotica,
he's
right?
It's
yeah,
a
no,
little,
it's not it's an, okay. Then it throws me out.
Well, it's as far as I can tell, it's a noir story. But the fact that that's how they introduce the fact, I don't know. I'm only 10 pages in.
I'm done.
You know how some books will start by like, I get up from my bed, I fix my shirt, I look in the mirror, I'm a chiseled 6.5-foot fox with like perfect bone structure, etc. That's kind of what that was like for, I guess, essentially saying a character was gay. You know, given that we have been trying to write professionally for so long, or writing professionally for so long, however you want to look at it, has sort of warped our view on what we might not consider good fiction anymore, but
I know that
when I first started, like, when I first discovered writing, reading, fan fiction, whatever, that if I were to go and look back at it now, I would probably physically vomit.
One of the things that Phil, also known as Rabbit on the forums, stated at one of the panels at RF last year was he can't read everything past a certain point in time because he finds himself editing it. And it's like...
So he'll only read a story until he starts... The editor mindset kicks in.
He won't read past a certain point in history. Like, he'll read classics like Huck Finn and all that, but he won't read modern literature because he finds that he spends most of his time editing it rather than actually reading it, which I can understand, but I also find that to be that, like,
but at the same time, if you read some of the classics, they really would not, if someone tried to run it through,
I'm not sure that's a good way of going,
it wouldn't go through
it.
They'll look at Lovecraft stuff. There's so much stuff in there.
I kind of have to think that there's something just a little bit wrong that you can only read something if it prevents you from thinking too much about it.
Sounds like romance novels.
There are a lot of stories that can do that on their own without having to be out of my own time period.
With myself, I've read works. It's made me more aware of when there's mistakes in the editing or the published work. Like, if I come across something and I look at it and I go, wait, that's not right. That was missed by the how many ever people that they've run through.
There are a lot of stories that I can no longer enjoy because of their level of editing or their level of attention to detail. But there are a lot of stories that I can appreciate for their attention to detail because I pick up on these things more. Like, I think that's the main difference. You can appreciate good works better and worse works.
Yeah, like if there's a well-written piece of work, I enjoy it far better now than I would when I was you know, before I started doing writing professionally, is because I would, now I look at it and go, oh, that's a really neat technique, or that's a really interesting word, or wow, they've framed this in such a way that this is beautifully and done.
Enjoying good work is somewhat universal regardless of your experience. I mean, like, it doesn't have to be the, you know, the book that your teacher made you read in grade 10, but when there's a, like, say, a good writer in the fandom, everybody enjoys them. You don't have to be a seasoned novelist to appreciate a lot of good work.
Very true.
So it's decreased my tolerance to poor editing and attention to
detail. You know, I've actually never had a tolerance for poor editing. Even before I started writing a lot, I would read a story and it would be bad enough that I would take a pen and I would write in the novel when they'd had the wrong word, they had poor grammar, I stopped that quickly because I have an issue with writing in books as an adult now, but if I didn't mark it in there, it would just throw me off when I read it again.
I think I have a more genuine disinterest in poorly edited novels, whereas when I was younger, it might have been a lot more, what's the word?
You just go around, you're doing it wrong.
Pompous?
You're doing it wrong.
Yes.
Like,
you're doing it wrong.
Like, as a kid, I almost made a point of, like, dismissing works because, you know, they didn't have certain aspects or they weren't written well enough.
See, and I never dismissed them. It pissed me off.
But I mean, it's sort of refined how I feel about certain stories. Like, I know why I dislike them now as opposed to doing it on a more instinctual level.
Well, I've never dismissed the author. I mean, we'll put it right out there. Anne McCaffrey's early works were very poorly edited. But that never threw me off her books because I liked her world, I liked her imagination. It's just I didn't like her editor. And I knew even then because it said written by and edited by in the book, right? So I knew that someone else was not doing their job. And her later books are, you know, of course, wonderful with very few spelling issues at all, but her early ones were pretty bad.
I mean, each person's going to have a different experience with that, but...
Oh, for sure. But I've always noticed bad editing, and I've always had an issue with it.
I've always been decently good with, you know, knowing where and when to put my punctuation and everything else, but I feel like I understand why a lot more now as opposed to just where...
Well, that's exactly it. Is it's just, it's it, with it comes an understanding, and in a way, with the understanding also comes a realization of how easy or difficult it would be to fix said mistakes. I go back to my wonderful lady that I've mentioned before on the podcast, where I read her books and I went through and I was like one star and I'm criticized and I'm just like, you know, like, yeah, the story was interesting. However, the main character is clearly Mary Sue and has no flaws and oh my God, the editing is terrible and whatever. And then I get the response of, well, yeah, the editing's kind of poor just because I've never actually had it edited. And it's like, why did you publish this for money?
Why are you taking money from people when you suck?
And there are definitely stories where I'm like, well, you know, maybe your proficiency in writing is there and your ideas, you know, you can see the potential in some stories, even though their execution is very poor. Like, I've read more than a few of those stories, too. But
this is one of those, yeah. Like, I agree. It's changed my perception on how, when I read a book, it's my attentive level to it is completely different than what it would normally be.
I find it funny though, one of my favorite quotes happens to be a Futurama quote, and it's, when you do things right, people won't know you've done anything at all.
Yeah. Oh, I love that
and it
one.
Takes a great amount of work to do things right so that people don't notice. They don't notice your characters doing 50 different things at once.
Yeah.
They don't notice that, you know, things are just a little bit out of place, or maybe things aren't a little bit out of place so that people don't notice the level of detail you've done in that. only when you have a trained eye, such as with art, such as with writing, such as with any hobby or craft, you don't notice the finer details until you've taken the time to learn them.
Yeah.
But that doesn't stop people who don't know from appreciating a fine quality piece of work.
Agreed.
Whoa.
Have we beaten this horse enough?
We have.
Okay.
No, what we've beaten is referring to beating horses.
Yeah.
The use of coffee shops and stories.
Fuck! Why are there so many coffee shops in stories?
Come on, are tea houses not valid?
I have a coffee
I'm
shop.
I'm pretty sure,
in my
like,
story.
Every story I write, there
coffee shops
one
were destroyed
shop.
In my story.
No, there's, like, I swear, there are, like, it's like, oh, it's poor coffee shop, not. It's all your story, but there's.
Think of it like how people do their first dates.
Wait,
like, oh,
wait, this is
do?
Actually
oh,
a valid topic.
Yeah, apparently.
You guys actually think there are too many coffee shops
yeah.
in stories?
Think about it. It's like the.
I am, and I can't think about
it. Default to, like, oh, I need a scene where people are talking together.
Are you thinking movies?
Like, it takes place almost entirely in a coffee shop.
Yeah, I wonder why, Mr. Coffee.
And that was on purpose.
I feel bad. Now I have to change Nippy's cup into something different.
I
no, they're
honestly
to drink
don't.
Coffee.
I
can't remember
the
last story the I read
shop.
That had a coffee shop in it.
She works at
so
the coffee
you can
shop.
Still do a coffee shop. It's just because
they meet there because it's close to his work and he's a coffee addict. He's working double shift.
No,
coffee
I'm
shops
honestly
are just
serious. I can't remember the last story I read that had a coffee shop. In it.
Maybe it's just because I write them all the time.
Like the last
maybe
story
you
I can
have
think of is
no, because I've never written a coffee shop before, but I have a coffee shop in this one because it seems. Proper. I mean, he's a workaholic. He
this
works
isn't
two
a valid
shifts.
Topic.
He needs the coffee.
Hey, you want to go write or go chat? Let's go to coffee.
Yeah, let's go to coffee. That
let's
sounds
go to
good.
Wendy's.
Done.
Yeah, no one ever writes a story about Wendy's.
I don't know. We were out of topic, so I brought up coffee shop.
Now, tea houses. We need more tea houses.
We actually do.
Is Nippy's Cup a good name for a coffee shop with? Like
sounds like the, like a coffee shop and strippers joint.
or a coffee shop where the milk.
Shut up! I'm serious.
Breast milk.
Fresh milk.
I still like Nippy's.
Would you like some lemonade? No, thank you.
How about Nippy's coffee?
Yep.
Or Nippy's tea. That
just
sounds even
use
worse.
Coffee.
Nippy's caffeine.
Or just picks. Nippy's, and then it's.
It's even worse.
It's Nipply out. Get some Nippy's.
Well, she's trying to flirt with them, and yeah.
Hey, it's pretty nippy out.
<I'm done>. Okay. That was good.
That's what she said.
So for this Christmas, we're going to do the similar topic, same, or
yeah.
writing the same topic.
Same character, same topic, same setting.
Can it be about Titus?
No, because Titus is your character.
I need to write more Titus.
So what
stories.
Do we all need?
We basically just need probably a situation, a character, a situation, and a setting.
Are there any restrictions we have on the story?
Besides those.
So
the whole point is we're
a
basically
coffee house.
We're proving the fact that you can have the exact same stuff. And people are still going to write different stories.
Oh, I know. I've been pushing that for at least 2 years now.
I know. So this is going to be the case where
this
is our story.
Cool.
Okay, I think it's time to end the podcast.
The train wreck is over.
It's not a train wreck. We had some really damn good conversations.
Train wreck is over.
I thought it started with the train wreck.
Yeah.
And it's going to end the same way, if you haven't noticed.
Well, it's more like a slow descent into the ocean.
Every
no,
time
it's,
someone
it's
says
deer
that,
headlights.
All I can
think
of is
we can see it ending very slowly, but it hasn't quite killed us yet.
So thank you for listening.
The band is still playing.
So thank you for listening to our episode of Fangs and Fonts without outline. Hopefully it was as chaotically fun for you as it was for us.
This is why we use the outline.
This is yeah. why we use the outline, just to remind you all. And ourselves.
This is
what happens when the cat herder takes a week off.
This is what your suggestions help us avoid.
Yes. So please, send in your suggestions as to what you would like us to talk about so we have something to talk about. At...
Where can they send that?
podcast at Fangs and Fonts.
That is correct. Yeah.
Facebook, Fangs and Fonts.
Fangsandfonts.net. I'll be posting the RSS feed to
Oh, it's .net now.
New?
At.
You don't even know our website anymore. That's great.
I just log into Bluehost and it kind of does things for me.
Fangsandfonts.com.
At Fangs and Fonts on Twitter.
For affinity, Fangs and Fonts. I think you're getting the idea.
I think I need to update that.
Claws and Quill. We need like all the aliases. So Fangs and Fonts, Claw and Quill.
No, Claw and Quill's an actual thing. It was Claw and Fonts.
Was it Claw and Fonts? Oh, okay.
But yes. This Christmas, as per last year, we are going to do another story run. Last year's was a lot of fun. This year, as per our conversations earlier in the podcast episodes, we're going to be taking a basically setting character and situations, and basically we're all going to write with the same materials to prove that even though you're writing about the same thing, you're going to end up with a different story. If you want to help us, mail in your character.
Even if you don't want to.
Yeah, even if you don't want to help us, email in your suggestions for setting characters or situations, or all three.
Or other details.
Or other details. And that would be great. This has been your chaotic episode of Fangs and Fonts with all your haunts.
A renegade rabbit at the IKEA with a butterscotch pudding.
Dude, if they know what...
Oh my god, that'd be so much fun to do!
If they know what if they know what we hate, right? It's going to be hybreds.
But
no, I thought it would be a hybrid bounty hunter in a coffee shop
with pudding,
with self insertion,
with pudding
and putty.
We have to do pudding self
insertion.
Also,
we want raccoons.
Also, because, you know, I have joined the psychotic pool enough. I've also started up a noir anthology through Fur Planet.
Dummy.
So yeah, I'm gonna be taking my turn at being insane.
Maybe you'll get yours done within the year. No, you won't.
I'm actually shooting for an RF next year release, assuming that it works out. I can do it. I will do it.
I have faith in you. I seriously have faith in
Knock
you.
On wood.
So, yeah, I'm going to do a noir anthology. If
and good then, luck.
Yeah. Jeez, how do I pitch this? So, noir. It doesn't have to be your classic 40s detective, black, white. I actually want a good mix of, like, all different genre mashups, like neo-noir and noir. They're all going to be great. They don't have to be about a detective. They don't have to involve law enforcement. There's a lot of different things you can do with noir. If you're on the Furry Writers Guild, I've got a thread up there that you can read, get some few ideas, ask questions. Otherwise, submissions are due March, I want to say.
And still on track. Expect to see Abandoned Places at MFF this December.
Why are you pushing my Windows buttons?
And that would be it.
Stop.
While Ocean pushes Roland's buttons.
Thanks for
God
listening.
Damn it, Ocean.
Let's go for coffee.
Thanks for listening,
Thanks
everybody.
For listening, everybody.
Thanks for listening.
I miss you.
I miss you so much.
I miss
Come
you,
back again.
Ocean
week.
Is rubbing his nipples, being very uncomfortable.
Next, please don't send in emails saying
He's
that we should have an outline.
Slightly
we'll have an outline next time.
Yeah,
perky.
We get it.
My nipples are always perky.
And cut.